Paul, the fan.
We have not caught up with our next guest on this show for way, way too long. And it's sad to think that it's the sort of tragedy that she's covering right now that has indeed gotten us back together. So I'll vow to try to not make it this rare if she will allow us to occasionally get her to be on the show with us. Randy Kaye, on a very busy stretch of time, is joining us via the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline, a name familiar to most of you. Big time star, Channel 4 here, gone on to greatness at CNN, and as a CNN reporter and CNN AC360 reporter as well. And last few days, she has been smack dab in the middle of the hurricane madness, largely reporting from the greater Fort Myers, Florida area. And she is indeed kind enough to join us. Randy, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Great to hear your voice, Dan.
It's really good to hear your voice, and I've been spending the last couple days actually watching several of your reports, either live or via tape, because they can be found online as well. So describe for us where you are today and what these last few days have been like from your perspective.
Well, right now I'm sitting in our satellite truck at Fort Myers Beach because I have to talk to you on a hard line because there's absolutely no cell service. So I'm not outside in the thick of it at this moment, but we've been here at Fort Myers Beach for the last couple days. And before that, we were in Punta Gorda when the storm came through. So we rode it out in Punta Gorda in a parking garage when things got too dangerous because it was really bad. So we knew we could take shelter. We moved our cars to higher ground. And we were waiting for these, 100 plus mile an hour winds, and they did come. And I was actually on the air with Wolf Blitzer when it hit, and it was wild to be outside in 100 plus mile an hour winds. And then the eye came over us, and it was so calm and quiet, and the birds came out, but you can't be fooled by that. And then we got caught in the backside of it as well. And it was just the force I've never seen. I mean, I've been through storms in Minnesota, which has some pretty good storms there.
Yeah.
And I've covered a lot of other hurricanes here in the state of Florida, Irma and some others. And this was like nothing I've ever seen. But now we've been surveying the damage around the Fort Myers area.
And give us a little sense of what the damage has been like. I've seen in some of those reports you were near some docks, you're near boats that were in the wrong place, parts of docks that are suddenly in downtown Fort Myers. What have you seen?
Yeah, it was, it was just crazy because the Gulf is right there, and also the Caloosahatchee River, and that both of those just overflowed. And, you remember the pictures of downtown Fort Myers just underwater. And we went there the next day, and the water had receded, but there were huge, massive chunks of docks in downtown Fort Myers that had been carried for blocks by wind and water. And then today last night we were at this, what should not have been a boatyard, but sure looked like a boatyard. It was just boats, one on top of each other, just stacked on top of each other, that had also been docked in the water and had traveled for, I don't even know, miles to get to where they were. And they were just all twisted up. And they, too, were still, and one of them had the boat line was still attached to its dock and took the dock with it. So, you can only imagine how forceful. I mean, I'm talking like, these things weigh tons. And then today we were interviewing a boat owner who has two 50-ton boats. He rode out the storm in one of them. And all of a sudden at like 3 a.m, he was carried into the street on his boat, still tied to the dock and still tied together. Two 50-ton boats were carried by the storm. So it's pretty remarkable. There's boats in trees. There's neighborhoods are just, flooded. I mean, I've been walking through, water up to my knees in neighborhoods. It's been pretty incredible.
Do you have any idea how many people might still be in the classification of still missing? Where, in terms of rescue operations, now that the worst of the storm has been passed, sort of where officials are in that regard?
Well, they've been, even the night of the storm, they were plucking people off rooftops around the Fort Myers area. But now they say officials, at least in Fort Myers, are saying that they're done with rescues. They're not getting any more calls. I don't know if that's good or bad, but they're not. And then they've been, certainly the Coast Guard and the searcher, we've been in touch with the search and rescue teams out of Miami. They've been in Sanibel Island. They've been in all over Fort Myers Beach doing search and rescue. But right now, you know, it's really unclear how many people could be trapped. We met one guy this morning who was looking for his mom. He went to her house. It was empty. But he doesn't know where she is, you know, but part of that is cell service. We don't, you know, you can't reach anybody, and that's the problem. So, and then also, you know, the evacuations, they tell you to evacuate, but then there's no, like, there's no check-in service, so you don't know who actually evacuated. So we do see people going door to door, but it's really hard to know who's still there and who isn't.
Do you have, can you get any sort of handle on what officials are saying regarding, you know, the number of people that actually did evacuate? Because, you know, there's always a challenge to that. Some people take those warnings seriously and they move to what's considered to be safer ground, higher ground, whatever. And then there's others say, no, I don't do that. I ride this thing out. Do we have any sense about, you know, the percentage of people who decided to just sort of hang around?
Unfortunately, I mean, look, according to the officials, they believe that there was a pretty good amount of them did heed the warnings and evacuate. At least, you know, when we were in Punta Gorda, they, you know, the barrier islands, that was, the, you know, Zone A, the
right.
first part to get the order of evacuating. But there are, you know, here, what we're finding here in the Fort Myers Beach area and probably on Sanibel Island, which is in such trouble, is that, you know, a lot of people thought this was going further north to Tampa. And then it made a turn and they didn't have a ton of notice. And all of a sudden it was further south and they were on the bad side of it. So, I think, you know, people, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that said, I didn't think it was going to be this bad. And that's when you know, like, so if there's a lot of other people who didn't think it was going to be that bad, they probably stayed home.
There is, we could assume there's no power at this point. Is there, what's the water situation? Is there any running water? What are those sorts of basic services people pretty much count on? Are any of those things functioning right now?
Not where we are. There was in Fort Myers area, there's 96% of the people yesterday were without power. Today it's down to like 86%. But all of, you know, the apartment buildings are dark. The stoplights don't work. There's no street lights. There's a curfew in place. None of the restaurants. Actually, there's one pizza restaurant open that had like an hour's wait, people in line trying to get some food. So it's, you know, it's pretty difficult. I mean, the neighborhoods are all dark. The signs are down, you know, from the wind or the storm. It's, you know, it's not so dissimilar to what we see, you know, in what I've seen in Minnesota, what you see plenty of, you know, when the tornadoes come through. But it's pretty, it's just really eerie, you know, certainly at night when it's so dark, you know, even just driving on the highway, it's just pitch black.
Randy Kay is our guest. Of course, she, a longtime friend of this show, continues to work for CNN as a reporter and, a correspondent for AC360 as well. So, you know, when you have to cover an event like this and you've done it more than once, there's always that question about what the line is regarding personal safety and getting to the story, that sort of thing. So what governs the decisions you make or CNN makes on your behalf regarding that balancing act for, yeah, we got it. This is what we pay you to do, is to cover difficult circumstances and to accept those challenges, but then also not obviously to, one would hope, put yourself in harm's way. In this case in particular, how do you go about making those decisions?
It's hard, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, CNN is great about saying, look, if you don't feel safe, don't do it. But, you know, I was at a boat dock for a little while when the storm was coming in. Then we felt we had no shelter because you have to have somewhere to run to, you know, just in case. So then we moved our cars up to this parking garage, as I mentioned, and we were up kind of on this little lookout area on the parking garage on an upper deck. But I felt too far away from the storm, even though it was coming in.
Yeah.
You know, so I asked my team, I'm with a producer and two photographers, and, you know, how do you guys feel? Let's go down to the street level. So we went down to the street level, and there was, you know, the photographer stayed more inside and I stepped outside, but I had this brick wall next to me. But it got, you know, more and more dangerous as it was dark because you couldn't see if anything was flying through the air, you know, so from the daytime you could see things, but you just have to, you always have to have somewhere to duck in, you know, plus we have a satellite truck with us sometimes, or we have what we call a live view, which is just basically a little backpack that we can use to go live from But, you know, with the satellite truck, it's very, very dangerous. At some point, they always have to put the dish down because they just can't risk it. But for me, I mean, I was on with Wolf Blitzer, and he kept saying, go inside, you know, but I just kept kind of turning my back, and my eyes were killing me because the rain was just pounding. It was so hard. It was just, it hurt my eyes. So at some point, you just have to say, okay, give me a minute. Let me regroup. Let's see. But you always make sure your team feels safe.
Sure.
You know, I would never want to put any of them in harm's way. And my producer, I know she, at one point I was on this little balcony and she was standing at my feet. They wanted to put sandbags on my feet to kind of hold me down like we do with a light stand, you know, in a situation like that. So I said, I don't want sandbags, but she was trying to hold me down. But the wind was, you know, if it catches you at that right moment, you know, it's going to push you down.
Well, you know, we hear this, we get this from listeners all the time when there's a tragedy, especially involving weather. It can be tornadoes, it can be hurricanes, and people get very bitter with what they see as this sort of quintessential shot of the reporter in the wind, sort of, you know, bracing against it, but out in the open, and they say, what's the point of that, and why do you have to do that? And I say, well, part of it is TV is... guess what? Very visual. And so in TV, you're trying to paint a picture and show a picture when possible. And I also believe, and you can speak to this because you do this on a daily basis, many of the people, and I would say reporters, behind the scenes people, camera people, producers, they're all in it because they kind of want to be in it. They want to cover the story. So they're not necessarily even asking for the kind of protection that the average rube seems to think that you know should sort of carry the day. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, I'm the one who said to my producer, I wanted to go experience it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done stories where I've been in, you know, we've gone into a wind tunnel where they basically tie you up, you know, with all these ropes, and you can feel what being inside a tornado or a hurricane feels like. I've done that story. But I had never been in the eye of a hurricane, which was absolutely incredible. It was like the most peaceful experience. But then when it comes in on the backside, I wanted to feel it. I wanted to know so I could talk about it. I mean, that's what we do. That's why, you know, I go out in the field instead of sitting on the desk. I like to be in that experience. So while it, you know, yeah, at times I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, but I wanted, I mean, cause it was a bit of a beating, I will tell you on this one, but,
sure.
But I wanted to know what it felt like, and I wanted to be able to describe it, and I wanted to take people as close as we could to it so they could see the pieces of metal flying around and what's going on out there, as opposed to just, you know, not doing that. I think it's important to experience it to the point where, you know, as long as you can do it safely.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, because I know the comeback I always get, and I'm already getting a couple of people saying this, like, oh, yeah, but what's the point of warning other people to try to stay safe? And I said, well, because the role is different. The idea is to try to give the larger public some sense of what's going on, right? It's there's a specific reason, and you could say it's self-serving for people in the business, but that's the point. So I bristle myself, and I don't do it. You do the work. I don't. I don't know that I could, but to me, that's a really key distinction. So what's the...
Yeah, and it doesn't mean just because I'm out there, I'm not staying safe,
right?
Like we're telling everybody else. Yes, we're telling you not to go out in it, but I'm not driving in it. You
right.
know, I mean, we're you know, and I have cover. I mean, I've seen some people who are out in it and they have no cover. We're always. I mean, I was literally a foot away from being inside in a parking garage. It was just. It just looks, you know, where I was, I could experience it, but then duck right in.
100%. So, like tonight, for example, just more of the same. Are we kind of in the cleanup phase here? Anything in particular you're going to be working on the rest of the day?
Yeah, I've talked to this this boat captain who it's his whole business. He has a hotel on the water. So he's got this, you know, six cabin boat, which is a hotel, which is amazing. And now it's got a giant gaping hole in cabin six. Cabin six is pretty much gone. So we talked to him. He shows us all about it, tells us all about riding out the storm in his boat, and shows us some pretty cool video of what he was seeing from his perspective. So we'll have that story on Anderson Cooper's show tonight.
And that, I look forward to that as well. On a personal note, we haven't talked in so long. It seems like everything's going good for you, certainly professionally. All is well in your CNN world.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been almost 18 years,
wow.
Dan, that I've been at CNN. I know. It feels like it was yesterday. But yeah, and it's, you know, it's been a lot of disasters. I mean, the week I started, it was the tsunami. So it's amazing,
amazing. How
much has gone on. But everything is good. I'm living in Florida, commuting to New York, and got my dog and my big golden retriever Gatsby, who's a lot of fun and helps me get rid of some stress, and still eating my goji berries, as you know.
Excellent. Well, you do great work. You always have, and it's good to see you still doing it, man. And in difficult conditions, it's great to catch up with you. And thanks again for giving us time on a busy day and working extra, because I know you went to the spot you're in now just to make sure we had a phone connection, and you could be doing other stuff. So thanks again for helping us out.
Of course. Let's make sure we talk when we're not in the middle of a disaster next time. Okay.
I will definitely hold to that promise. Thanks, Randy.
All right. Take care.
You too. Be good. Randy Kaye, CNN AC360 reporter. Man, it's been a long time since we've had her on. We used to have her on pretty regularly. Maybe we'll try to work on that again in the belly of the Hurricane Beast. Now it's the aftermath, of course, in Fort Myers. And by the way, I think most of you know officially that the Tampa Bay game is indeed scheduled against the Chiefs, is going to stay in Tampa Bay. The word earlier in the week was if it had to be moved, it was going to be moved here. But the decision has now been made official. No game at the People's Stadium involving the Chiefs and the Bucks, correct, on Sunday night?
That's correct. Though, if you want to watch, who is the group? Did we talk about this or did somebody else? You know, youth football teams rent out the bank?
Yes, we got an email from somebody bitter basically saying we want free tickets.
So if you
want
to go watch, you know, the Mankato youth program, I think if my son's game there in a few weeks is any indication, it's like $25 for the day. So if you want to watch that, maybe just contact the Mankato Youth Football Association. You can go down to the People's Stadium and watch that.
It's all good. We'll get to a couple of emails that have come in. Don't forget, Ben Gessling, maybe as early as 4:30 from London. That'll sort of depend on whether he's out of the play or whether he's still maybe he'll be unhappy with the performance and be throwing tomatoes on the stage. I don't exactly know, but he's trying to get some culture before the big Vikings game, and a lot of show left to go. We'll get some emails and back into the Tua controversy as well. Gessling originally scheduled for 4:30 today. We're moving him to 4:55. He'll be filing a live report from London, England. Naima, City's 97 morning show fame, is scheduled to join at about 5:15 or so. Lavelle will join us at about 5:30 or 5:35 as well. I got the sort of predictable emails that we always get when we're discussing this odd obsession that, maybe I better put it, the sort of automatic itch that some of our listeners feel obligated to scratch. I'm beginning to think it's in part because they hear other people say it and they think it sounds smart, and so they decide to sound smart too. And that is this concern that you're telling everybody on these news shows covering breaking news to, shall we say, don't tempt the weather gods in bad conditions. Don't go out in it. Don't try to frolic in it. Don't try to make any point in it. Conditions can be dangerous. And yet here I see these reporters and these weather people out in the middle of it. How dare they? And it continues for me, Gardzi, to be one of the most bizarre obsessions that I've come across in all the time that I've done this show, because it happens almost invariably, almost every time. And now because we're in a social media age, then everybody tweets about it, and we're telling everybody to be safe, and what kind of example are you setting? I'll say it again for the 15th time. This isn't rocket science. This isn't a difficult equation. This shouldn't be as challenging as some people make it. Most of the time, certainly as it pertains to a reporter such as Randy Kay and the people that work with her, is they're charged with getting as close to the story, yes, even dangerous stories, as possible. So I have enough faith in most people in the population to say, well, that doesn't mean me watching from that maybe 10 blocks away or watching in the same zip code. But that means the implicit message being conveyed is, well, they're out in it. I can go out in it, too, and then I might die. And then it will be, what, Randy Kay's fault or whoever the reporter is who's out covering it? This is just so stupid. People are brighter than that. And if they're not, that's on them. If they can't see the distinction between people who are trying to bring light to a story. Now, the occasional weather chumbalone who decides I want to go viral with
the storm chaser.
I'll say again, TV is visual. People complain about it, but you know what they do? They watch. They watch those scenes. Those scenes may not add that much to a story the way an actual reporter is trying to add to a story. But I don't understand why this annoys people to the degree that it does, other than they hear other people say it. It's become a cliche. It has literally become a cliche that I got to show how pissed off I am that they're out there and they told us not to be out there and they're out there. It ain't tough to figure out. If you want to be an idiot, be an idiot. Go out in it and use that as an excuse if you get hurt. Well, they were out there. It'll make you feel better. It won't have any impact on whatever injuries that you indeed have, but it's just, why is that so difficult for people? It's bizarre to me that it's almost like there's a resentment related to the willingness to go out into to cover some of these stories, and they're not the easiest to cover, right? And, you know, it's funny, we were talking about the subtle pressures that quarterbacks, for example, Tua, might feel to be there for his team and the impact that might have on perhaps even answers he gives to doctors' questions about what hurts and, you know, what you see and how dizzy are you and all that sort of thing. The truth of the matter is there's always going to be a subtle pressure if you're working for CNN or certainly any national media outlet, right? They're going to say, the Wolf Blitzers of the world are going to say, and I'm not saying they don't mean it. They'll say, are you safe? Don't do anything that's dangerous. But you know, and I know there's still that same subtle pressure that if that's your job, you're probably going to push the envelope a little bit. But because you in your role are pushing the envelope, the idea that somehow that needs to be mocked and ridiculed makes no sense to me as setting a bad example. If, like I said, you're moronic enough to go out in the streets because there's somebody on TV covering a story who's out in the streets, that's on you for being stupid. That's not on anybody else for being. And the truth of the matter is most people get that, don't they? I honestly think,
it's
most
a very
people
small percentage
do get it. It's just we get it almost every single time. It's just silly and kind of dumb. Dimension Lovell, he's going to join after Naima. And
what we call guest intensive in the 5 o'clock.
Very hour. Much so, yeah. But we're going all the way till 6:30, right?
We are.
As far as we know. That part hasn't changed.
Correct.
I don't think so. Boothatkfan.com is the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. I didn't see, if I'd have seen this email, I might have I would have asked Randy about it. Kurt from Roseville writes, watching her this morning, and I heard folks yelling at her, don't film my boat and other things. He wanted to know, were things getting pretty tense in the field? Randy getting heckled by boat owners. That kind of stuff does happen. We've talked to her about that before, and that is part of the sensitivity of the job, right? You're trying to cover it. You're also trying to be fair to people who are, guess what, vulnerable, right? They don't want to necessarily be props to your storyline or to whatever pictures are being shown. And it's another reason, Guardsy, why I never felt like, during my newspaper days, that was a strength of mine. Because it's hard to approach people who sometimes don't want to be approached.
That's it.
They're not in the mood to be approached. I told you, the worst assignment I ever had, and I flunked it, was there'd been a plane crash just outside the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. This goes back, I was there from 81 to 86, so I don't remember what year this would have been. It was a Delta flight, as I recall. And the old deal of, okay, the morning news, Dallas Morning News, all hands on deck. I think the crash happened on a Friday. My assignment on a Saturday was, all right, we need you to meet flights of family members of those who perished in the crash. Ooh. Coming to town to obviously do what they can and just be on the scene.
That's tough.
And because I was young, I raised my hand because you want to be in the middle of it, obviously. And I met a couple. We identified the flights. So I was at the gate. This was before the days where you had to have a ticket. You know, there was no security issue back then. And I met, and I'm walking along with these folks. I never asked them a single question because I choked. And part of it was, it's like, well, how much is this adding to the story? How do I stop somebody? How do I know that the person I'm stopping lost somebody? It's very complicated and so forth. But my point, I bring all that up just to say, it's not always an easy position to be in at a time of tragedy, right? Because people are hurt, sometimes literally, often figuratively. They're bitter. They're angry. They don't necessarily, some people find it therapeutic to have a camera in their face. We see those stories that are done. And for them, they're willing to because they want the story out. Others, not so much. So it's not a very easy position to be in at all. Let's get a pause in here, and we get some emails to get to, and I want to get back to the Tua controversy as well and play a bit of sound from one of the commentators on ESPN this morning. Had something to say that resonated very much with me. There's been a million things said and written. There's going to be a bunch over the weekend. But we may use that particular soundbite to get back into the subject next.
Time now for the Vikings Report on the Fan, presented by Vizzy Hard Seltzer, official hard seltzer of the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings' Patrick Peterson joins Barrero next. After this, from Vizzy Hard Seltzer, again, the Fan.
You can win sausage seats to see the Dave Matthews Band at Target Center November 13th. Listen all week to the Power Trip to score your tickets. Complete concert details, including the link to buy, are at KFAN.com.
Thelonious, my old friend. Step on in and let me shake your hand.
Not surprising that the lead story on ESPN this morning was the Tua controversy. And guess what? It all starts with the visual. Once again, visual is very powerful from last night's game. Visual matters, especially in TV. It wasn't just what people were saying, but what they could see about how damaged the Miami Dolphins quarterback seemed to be just, 4 days after he had gotten hurt, wobbly, getting up, almost collapsing again during the first half of the Sunday game against the Buffalo Bills. So the debate is on. How could he possibly have been allowed to play? How could he possibly have passed concussion protocol on after Sunday? If you recall, the Dolphins eventually said he had back issues and a couple of other things. It was not a head issue. How was that established? Was he evaluated the way that he should be if indeed there was a possibility of concussion? We now have an independent doctor. That's supposed to be one of the changes that was hailed by everybody, by all the experts. I, like a lot of people, scratched my head and said, but I'm not a doctor. I didn't examine him. None of us have. But based on their own protocol about concussion, it certainly looked like there was something that happened to the head. Got slammed back on Sunday, had difficulty getting up, ends up playing the second half of that game, plays well. Then he's in the lineup on Thursday. There were people who thought he shouldn't be. I was stunned that he was cleared, like a lot of people. It doesn't add up to me. But there's a larger issue here that I thought Dominique Foxworth, who's on the ESPN, he's you know, on part of the cabal of reporters and commentators they have there. He does a bunch of radio stuff too, doesn't he? He's all over. I think ESPN and several other. He might have some podcasts, etc. And there's about a minute 30 here I want you to listen to about, I think, a larger point that I thought he was the only one to make that is worthy of our consideration as we wag our fingers and point and say, this cannot stand, this should not stand. How does this possibly happen?
When things like this happen, we often are up in arms and all sanctimonious about how dangerous this is and how bad the NFL is. But if we're being completely honest with ourselves, subconcussive episodes are just as dangerous as these big, ugly hits. So if we don't have a big, ugly hit to talk about on the morning after a game, we just continue along our lives as if nothing happened. However, the players who played, who had multiple just head contact after head contact after head contact, like, they are also increasing their risk of CTE, because that's what this is all about. We're concerned about the player's long-term health, because once we discovered, I guess it was in 2008, I think it was, when we discovered that the NFL was hiding the findings of reports that suggested that there were links to CTE and dementia were linked to being involved in playing football. They were hiding that, so they can't be trusted. Once we found that out, we all were kind of concerned about these big, shocking hits that make us uncomfortable and are ugly. But we got to be honest about this game. We have not figured out a way to make it safe. And it's up to the players, obviously, to make a choice whether they want to be involved in this game or not. I would obviously not go back and change that because of all of the things that it's done for my life. But again, it's easy to say this now. I haven't reached the darkness that people like Junior Seau have reached, to a point where they feel like they are better off taking their lives than it is to continue living. So I would definitely feel differently at that point. So that's what this is all about. And I think we all need to understand that as long as we support the NFL, as long as we watch the NFL, we are complicit in allowing these things to happen.
Bingo. People don't like to hear it. A lot of my fellow media jackals don't want to hear it because they're up in arms about this specific gross example in their mind. But I think Foxworth makes several really crucial larger points here. I mean, we can soothe ourselves in sanctimony by expressing outrage when the system seems to fail in such a gross example. But in an odd sort of way, that kind of deflects from the larger point, which he made. As impractical as this is, given the amount of money involved, if we want to make people safe, we stop playing the game of football. Period. But we want it both ways. When we cover this stuff, some of the very same people who are on the soapbox more than ever on this thing, They are among the people that want this. They want it both ways. They still want to, because you know what? You know what they did the next hour? Covered games. Covered story angles. Is this game going to be an upset? Or all the things that we usually do that's being done all over the country the rest of the day, tonight, tomorrow, into Saturday, Sunday, Monday, etc. Because we're all too invested in it. In some cases, literally. And so we get on the soapbox in part because then it deflects us from the larger point. And it's easier to do that than to admit that, well, you know, we can say, well, we want to make it safer. But if he's right about all those little hits, we're not going to be able to make it safe. And we have to at least be honest about that. Doesn't mean you let the Dolphins off the hook if they haven't followed protocol. It's really not the point, but it's what I have often come back to on these stories, that we're caught on this one. I just don't think, no matter whatever changes are made that might make it safer, that other than going to flag football, which we're not going to do because this industry wouldn't be worth billions and billions of dollars if it was flag football. We like the violence. We might not like, deep down, people getting maimed, But we like the physicality of it. That's, let's be honest. I don't think that means everybody in America is bloodthirsty. I don't think that that means if you like football, that's all you like about it. But let's be honest, that's a significant part about what drives this thing. And I'm not here to necessarily judge that, but I am here to say, let's be truthful about it and not pretend that we get to the bottom of this, we're going to take care of it. No, you're not going to take care of it because there's a million other hits that aren't as spectacular, that aren't as obvious to the naked eye, that over a period of time have tremendous impact. It's interesting because Allen and Alton wrote, I find it ironic that reporters will argue that Tua and the NFL players should not be able to decide to take the risk and decide when it is safe for them to play, and then argue they can decide when it is safe for themselves to go into a hurricane to, quote, do their job. At what point do we allow people to make their own decisions and weigh their own risk? I know it's not the same, but I find it ironic that you were addressing both stories back to back. It's a good email, and it raises interesting questions. I would say there's significant distinctions here, and you heard it a little bit, I think, in that Foxworth soundbite, because Foxworth admitted what we talked about earlier, Gardzi, that knowing what he knows now, he still would have gone on and played football as long as he did. But what else did he admit? He admitted that, but I'm not at that dark place yet, that some players, he mentioned Junior Seau, others have gotten to. That's a really human answer, I think, where he's admitting that that's where you're almost, I think, any league that governs such a brutal sport is obligated to try to not necessarily just put in the hands of players. Because ultimately, you know me, I am a, once CTE has been, the link has been established, and it has been established pretty credibly, then I'm going to let adults make their own decision on whether they want to take that risk. I am. Some people don't agree with that, but I am willing to give people that much. But in an individual case involving somebody who has been concussed, then I think you do have a right or an obligation to say, we can't simply put that specific example in the hands of the players because they may not even understand what's going on medically in their head. That's different than the risk in theory, right? At any time, something bad could happen to you. In this case, something bad did happen to you, right? Now, how bad depends on, I guess, the severity of the case, what kind of testing they do, that sort of thing. But to me, that's the that would be the distinction I would draw, that you have the chance in this case you have a compromised person
from
a few days back, as opposed to a reporter, Randy Kay, covering story after story in which she is potentially putting herself in harm's way. And that sort of harm, by the way, is literally, I guess, you could lose your life in a worst-case scenario, but not necessarily that there's going to be a chronic result from covering a lot of those events, right? There's not, unless you actually have face physical consequences
every time
to what you're doing. That would be the difference. Anything else before we go?
No, not really. I'm curious what type of info we're going to get on all these different investigations that are going on now, right? About what happened on the front end, what happened during the week. Are they going to change protocols? Tua has put out a statement that says, hey, feeling good. Everything. Yeah. Yep. Looking forward to getting back with my teammates, which you would expect him to say. So we'll just keep.
We have to decide if we literally want to go to a system where if you get a concussion, you're out a week, period, or not. And some people think we should. The other side of that is, if they tested him and after the Sunday game and they didn't come up with anything, you either believe in the procedure or you don't. And the procedure we thought we were supposed to believe in more than the old procedure, because it was supposed to involve an independent head doctor, correct?
Yeah.
So I don't know, is he in on the conspiracy? Maybe. I'm not ruling anything out. It's the National Football League. But I think we have to also put that into the equation. Let's take a pause here. And when we come back, Ben Gessling, first of all, he's going to give us a play review, because apparently he just went to see a play in jolly old England, in London. And then we'll talk about Vikings versus